There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Monday. Glad to have you along. If you're just joining us, you're new to the show, phone number still 343-0106, 343-0106. And always good to talk to our next guest, my buddy, John Sharp from AL.com. Hey, man.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm good. No pressure, but you know, college pick'em starts this weekend. So I just want to let you know.
I'm signed up. I'm ready to go. When will we know the matchups for this week?
Wes Dalton, usually it's by midweek. So y'all refresh that. And would you think about the Florida State performance in Dublin? Florida State.
Yeah, I didn't really get a chance to watch the game this weekend. Super busy, but right off the bat we got an upset. So this is going to be a fun year. Nobody really knows what's going to happen, especially with this new playoff format. So, you know, this I find it to be kind of exciting, and a lot of people are like, well, you know, this is, we don't like where the game's heading and this sort of thing. I sense that this season's going to be a lot of fun, and, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the whole playoff shakes out.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe that'll give me a chance. I don't know, because I just randomly pick games. Maybe they'll be good for me, bad for me. I'm not sure. I do want to read this text from Monty, because this gets into the first story I want to talk about with you. So Monty said, there's no larger self-awareness that you're controlled by government entities than sitting at a traffic signals on Airport Boulevard for no apparent reason. I wonder how much commerce has slowed down cumulatively for absolutely no reason whatsoever. Monty is hitting on one of my favorite subjects, because it bothers me, not because I like the... Is the light sinking on Airport? Because I don't know what's going on, but there's some kind of sadist that sets those lights. But you have a story about ALDOT's making improvements to 174 traffic. Are any of these on Airport Boulevard?
The first tranche, I don't think so.
That should be a Manhattan project. They should do nothing but fix Airport Boulevard light sinking before anything else. But yeah, this is a pretty big thing, and I guess they're doing it this week, starting round one.
Right, starting round one. This is not cheap. They're doing, this is part of this round that they're working on right now is a $2.5 million investment that the states combining with the city and the county. The first round is 66 traffic signals, retiming them, getting them in sync, et cetera, et cetera. But the locations include some of your, you know, major thoroughfares of Dauphin Street, Old Shell Road. It sounds like mostly in the downtown, midtown areas is kind of where they're focusing this beginning part of this process. Now, this starts this week. The entire project goes through late October. So this is going on for some time. I guess while they're doing this, the state wanted to send out an alert saying that, hey, you could expect some temporary disruptions. Motorists need to be careful, remain patient. You know, if the lights are not, you know, working right at that point in particular time they arrived to that intersection. So just be aware that the state's working on this. This is part of an overall $6 billion investment that the state has made on improving signals on state routes throughout the area. In the city and the county have also provided investments as well into this project in order to address some of the intersections in their jurisdiction. So, yeah, it's a project that begins right now and is going to go on through October.
Yeah, and I am fascinated. Maybe you know the person. If not, I'm putting this open. I think I've asked people with the city before, just generally, but if somebody knows, it's a lot of money here, but I'm not going to claim to know how much it costs to do this, because I don't. This is a world of things I don't understand. $6 million, like you said, from the state, but locally, you know, $1.5 million from the city. What? How do they do this thing? Because, I mean, I can sit here and say the lights don't seem synced very well to me, but how do they, I mean, is it, did they say anything about how they do this?
No, they didn't get into the nuts and the bolts in the release from last week. And you do raise, I mean, it is interesting, you know, that, I mean, they got to go to the actual signals and do the improvements they have to do on site. So it's not being done at some control area centrally located.
Okay, so there's not a, okay, I was wondering, so there's not like the command hub where they can click a button right. And change it? Okay.
That's correct. And, you know, Baldwin County did something along these lines a couple years ago, and I think there was some, you know, US 98, some of your major thoroughfares over here, there was, and I can't really recall who all paid for what, but, you know, make a long story short, I think there was a little disappointment in that, you know, that, you know, the state, you know, this was part of the Eastern Shore Metropolitan Planning Organization's, one of their first projects that they took on. So it's been, like I said, several years ago. And I think there was a little disappointment that, well, you know, this didn't really resolve the problem that we thought it might, but, you know, we decided to go down this path and see if they would make improvements. You know, that'd be interesting to revisit and see whether or not, you know, this is something that they might want to, you know, especially in the Eastern Shore area where traffic is like Airport Boulevard in many cases. We have a lot of traffic. If this is the type of, thing that needs to be invested into to make these type of improvements. And it could be just upgrading the traffic signals in general because they need to be upgraded. You know, it's like any kind of machinery. It needs to be tweaked. And is that where we're going with this right now as well? So
yeah, and I don't know how they do it. If they are listening out there, the ubiquitous they, I would just start with the lowest hanging fruit first. And back to my bailiwick here of Airport Boulevard, you know, when you're in the early, you know, late hours when there's not as much traffic, those north-south routes that intersect with Airport probably don't need to sit there with nobody Foreman Road that y'all know about here. Foreman Road, I'm talking about you specifically, and you sit there and there's not even anybody thinking about coming through the intersection on Foreman, and you're sitting there on Airport. But this is in waves. Will it come out from, like, because this is LDOT has more money in it than the city. Do you think the city's going to come out and tell us, okay, we fixed these ones and here's the improvement, or does LDOT come out? Who holds the steering wheel on this?
Sounds like LDOT does at this point. They're holding the steering wheel. Usually in these types of situations, if there was an issue involving, you know, delays or any kind of potential road construction disruptions and that sort of thing, we get something from the city. But, you know, LDOT's taking the lead on this. And you do raise some good questions, and perhaps we can get James Gordon to explain a little bit further what we can expect when this all comes to a conclusion. But it's something that motorists just need to be aware of, and from now until October, it's particular. And there's a link too to the website, to LDOT's website. They'll list all the intersections as they're going to be working on them, and the time frame that they're going to be looking at that.
Yeah, y'all go look at John's story and hit the link. Then at the office, when somebody says, well, I don't know why that light was all goofy today at such and such, you can say, well, Fred, let me tell you, and here's why. Then you could ride herd over them. Okay, I talked last hour, I was talking to Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News, and he spent time in Washington, and I, you know, was saying, hey, the fact that Shamari Figures spoke on the big night. Now, a lot of cable news had cut away from it during that point, but it was a big deal to have Figures on that fourth night of the DNC. And not that somebody had to tell me that there was going to be outside influence in AL2, but that went ahead and made the concrete dry for me. This is coming down to a lot of eyes looking at this district in the state of Alabama, AL2.
You are right. And kind of piggyback on that, today we just released our story on this, and we got to confirm that both candidates are going to be participating in a debate that AL.com will be hosting online.
I was proud of y'all for it. I said, you know, good for y'all because it needed to be done. And I've taken part in these in the past, but y'all got this one, and that's pretty darn good because this is, I mean, for you and I, it's not a thing, but for normal people, they may not be making decisions in this until mid-October.
Yeah, that's true. You know, most people aren't going to be thinking about a lot of these down ballot races until October. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the timing of this is important. But, yeah, you know, we'll have both candidates. They'll be together, no audience. It'll be, you know, we'll have one moderator, is my understanding, and then it's going to be broadcast live on Facebook and YouTube, and it's going to be issue orientated and focused. Now, you don't know how the debate might go as it's happening, but that's kind of what we're looking at right now. Excited about this, but yeah, check out the story as the details as we know it right now up on AL.com. But yeah, both candidates have confirmed that they'll participate. And you know, this is a race of, there's a lot at stake here. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. the partisan split in the House is pretty close, and there's a lot of races that are, you know, really up in the air throughout the country. And this one is, you know, it's really a tight contest. Yeah, you know, you look at the Cook Political Reports and those Sabato's crystal ball, they anticipate this district, since it's been redrawn through the courts, that it leans Democratic. But Caroline Dobson has proven to be a formidable opponent. She has the National Republicans on her side. She's been adept at fundraising. So yeah, this is and you mentioned Shamari Figures having a national stage at the Democratic National Convention. So you got two candidates here that are in their 30s, and you know they're firing on all cylinders. And so this is an interesting race. You know, we don't get very many competitive congressional district contests, and so this is something that's it's good to have, I think, for the state.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, I don't like the redrawn districts. I've been on record on that, but it is interesting. And I think that people have, and me included, have gone back to it. I don't know if it plays out now with the added attention and what's going to come in with door knockers coming in from out of state and money coming in from out of state. But if you look back at the primaries, the turnout in the primaries for the Republicans and Democrats it's pretty close. I don't have it in front of me, but just a couple hundred votes maybe difference in who came out, you know, for Dobson, who came out for Figures. So it's not a landslide either way. If you go back to that time, it's pretty tight.
Yeah, if you look at the primaries, I think things switched a little bit towards the runoffs, but, you know, you get such low turnout, it's hard to really do an accurate comparison of who's going to show up. Certainly it's not accurate when between, you know, comparing a turnout from a primary runoff to a general election. You're going to have a completely different set of voters showing up. And so, yeah, I mean, and we got a presidential election on the ballot. So it really, you know, between these two candidates, it's good. It's about who they can get out the vote. I think for Figures, probably a little bit of a bump up with Kamala Harris instead of Joe Biden on the ticket. A little bit more energy out there, but I don't know what that might mean in the second district. Certainly, Caroline Dobson's been out there a lot. Mm-hmm. She's at a lot of events.
She hustles.
There's some hustling going on, and so I'm really glad that, you know, there's going to be a debate, and I think a lot of folks hopefully will be attuned in. My understanding is there's no other debates right now being planned with the two candidates. That's not to say that there might not be a televised, a TV station that might have one mm-hmm. in studio or I know there were some leading up into the primary and the primary runoff, but I have not heard of anything happening, leading up to the general election, other than the one that we're going to be hosting on October the 10th.
Yeah, and I'll be watching it. And y'all, that is the benefit of having close elections, because when it's blowouts, they don't, you know, most times there's, you know, the KIV effect. They're not going to debate because they got, you know, they've got the lead where they don't need to. But in this one being so close, I think both sides need this debate, and we, the voters, get to see it.
Yeah. And, I'm one that likes, you know, this is, I don't think it's wrong to provide an opinion on this, but I think more debates are good. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. it's healthy for
Me too.
For what, you know, for what the electorate really, you know, and especially in these competitive races, even when a race isn't overly competitive, but it somewhat is, it doesn't hurt to have a debate on issues.
Oh, no, I always want them. I mean, I want them in everything, but I just know that the candidates will be like, there's no reason to risk anything if they have a good lead. But, oh, I want them in every primary and every general, you know, matchup. I want them, but that doesn't mean I'm going to get them.
Yeah, that's correct. And, you know, it just reminds me of the special Senate election when we had the mano-a-mano debate between Roy Moore and Luther Strange.
Yeah.
You know, it's just been kind of, since then, it's always been kind of a, you know, jumping through hoops to get a good debate anymore in these races. And I'm kind of glad that we're heading, it seems to be in this direction with this particular debate on October the 10th and to hear from the two candidates. You know, we're running for a lot at stake. So, you know, away we go.
Absolutely. John, remind folks, too, whether they want to get more of these stories and talk with you about that or even start talking some football with you, where's the best place to find you online outside of just going to AL.com?
Yeah, I'm on X, Twitter, at JohnSharp99.
Okay, so if y'all want to talk some football trash, he gave you the address of where to go. All right.
Here's the season.
That's right. That is for sure. All right, my brother, we'll talk to you soon.
All right, John. Thanks.
All right, there goes John Sharp, and we're coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 126, FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Monday. Get the week started with my man Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry and get an update on precious metals prices. Hey, Ron.
How you doing, sir, Sean?
I'm good, brother. So what are we looking like? It was a lot to talk about last week with gold and silver. How are we looking on this Monday?
Same old. It's still climbing the ladder. Gold's roughly $25.45. Silver is standing right at $30 an ounce. So it's creeping up the way you would expect it to, because anything that runs up fast drops usually just as fast. So it's been a nice, steady climb. It's still plenty of time for people to get in and create a hedge. I mean, if they really want to invest in the metals, they could. I'm usually not an advocate of that. I look at it more as a way to hedge your other investments and protect your cash and your 401k and things like that. It's been busy. We had a lot of newbies coming in and getting training, hearing us on your show, talking about it, and just getting a free one-on-one lesson, help them try to ascertain how to tell whether something's real or not, because there are a lot of fake items out there. You want to make sure you know your seller, and having somebody at a brick-and-mortar location in town that you can deal with in case there's a problem is really important.
Yeah, the way to solve this is to come see you in person, like you said, brick-and-mortar. How do they fool people? Like, give me examples of what people should watch out for.
Well, there's a lot of, like, on Instagram and Facebook right now, you just search on Silver Eagles and you'll find them from China at $24 a piece or $12 a piece. Who's going to sell something at half price when it's precious metals? There's no, if it's too good to be true, it is. It's just not true. And we had a person bring 50 of them in here that they bought. Every single one was fake. And of course, since it was on Instagram and things like that, and he had to pay with a service that he couldn't get his money back on, it's just lost money. So call the shop. If you see something online and think, man, I'd like to get into it, we won't try talking to coming in here. We'll tell you whether or not we think it's fair and safe what you're working with. And if it's not, we'll recommend, of course, that you shop it around or buy local where you have just resources in case there's a problem, somebody you can talk to, a way to get your money back. Never pay anybody with a service that doesn't have a refundable service. I mean, if you use a credit card, you can always protect yourself. There's a lot of ways to do it. They can call us for free advice.
Yep, and he can run that through the BS detector and then give you an education. Ron, tell folks how to find you.
We're located at 2204 Government Street in Midtown Mobile. You can find us on the web at mobilebaycoins.com or just give us a call, 251-725-1590.
All right, thank you, brother. We'll talk soon.
You're welcome, Sean.
All right, there goes Ron at Mobile Bay Coins and Fine Jewelry. Back to the text line here. This texter said, will the astronauts stranded in space get to do absentee ballot? That's a great question. One I do not have an answer to. I don't know the rules for being stuck in space and absentee ballot. I don't know. When they left in June, I'm sure they thought they would be back in time to vote. They don't. Ken says cities with level one trauma centers like Mobile have skewed crime stats because there's no category for, quote, would have been a homicide, end quote, but the doctor saved him or her. That's interesting. Supermom said, did the news say they might not get a Trump-Harris debate? I think I'm going to be a little bit mad if we don't. I've been waiting on this. How sad am I for that to be a weeknight highlight? Yeah, what? You're as sad as... You live as dangerously as I do, because I'm that's a weeknight highlight for me, too. Oh, all right. Thank you, Dalton said, for all in the College Pick'em. And you can still get in College Pick'em now. Matchups are up with the point spreads as of now. All right. So check that out. Coming right back. More Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Monday. This segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Monday, a day, you know, people make plans and get to, okay, this is the week we're going to get something done. So let me help you with this. You got junk you need to get rid of, and you've been saying, I'm going to get around to it. Well, here's your round to it. It's my man Trey with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. So you got junk at the house, outside the house, storage unit, office, big stuff, small stuff, stuff you need to get out of your way. Make it happen with an appointment with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. So this is my buddy, Trey. He's been doing it for 16-plus years in Mobile and Baldwin County. And so many people like me, people that work here, even this radio station as like an entity, have used the service with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. But you can go to the Google reviews and just look for 1-800-GOT-JUNK for Mobile. And you'll see the number of people that you know, neighbors, friends, people you go to school, you know, that your kids go to school with, their parents or people at church, anywhere. You're going to see their names who have used this service. And like I point out, when people go online to tell you how good something is, it says a whole bunch. I mean, people are really quick to complain online, but to look at people who get online to say, this is really awesome, this service is awesome, it gives you confidence. But I'll tell you right now, he's a friend of mine, great guy, great company. Get junk gone with 1-800-GOT-JUNK. You can go online to make the appointment to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com or pick up the phone. The name is the number. That's why they got that swanky 1-800-GOT-JUNK as a name. 1-800-GOT-JUNK gets you through. The website, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, gets you through. They'll get you set up for an appointment. They'll come out, get the junk gone, make that appointment starting today. It's a Monday, so get with it. All right, I mentioned earlier, and this is... good. I mean, I'm impressed, number one, with anybody who sits down and writes a novel in the first place. But when they're turning them out like this guy, I'm super impressed. David Preston joining us now. His last novel we were talking about, Unknown Soldier, the World War One, the book that, you know, focuses on World War One and Alabama. And now David, 1828. How long between the two books are you? What are you working with? 2 years?
About a year and a half total for both books. Of course, I was writing both of them at the same time, but I really, my time freed up after my leg amputation in November to really sit down and focus on writing since November. So that's really when the time freed up for me to be able to do it.
I mean, because a lot of us, you know, people say, I don't know how many of us, but I'm one of those, that one day I'm going to sit down and write this book. I've got ideas, I've got notes down there, but actually doing it, I mean, that's a huge thing. And you've now done it twice. I'm impressed, man.
And already working on my third book, too.
How do you decide what you're going to do a book on? I mean, because there's so many things out there. I mean, what leads you to saying, out of all the things I find interesting, this is the story I'm going to tell?
Well, I've got ADHD, so I've got to go down lots of different rabbit holes. The 1828 was actually spawned out of a conversation that my brother and I had based off of an offhanded comment that President Trump said while he was president. So,
his offhanded comment, what did he say?
He said he made an offhanded comment that if Andrew Jackson had been president during the Civil War, he would have put a stop to it pretty quickly. Well, after thinking to myself, if he was president during the Civil War, he'd have been dead because he was already 61 in 1828 when he was elected president.
Don't get into facts.
He would have been in his mid-90s if he had been president during the Civil War. So that would have been older than Joe Biden is now. So, yeah. But I thought to myself, if there was a Civil War back when Andrew Jackson was president, he probably would have been leading the rebellion, because that would have meant that John Quincy Adams stole the 1828 election like he was accused of doing the 1824 election. And then it just, the idea spawned from there with a conversation with my brother of what if that had actually happened. And that's where the whole idea for 1828 and the alternate universe that is going to spawn is going came from, is that is those conversations.
This is, and by the way, once again, this is why it's good to pay attention to history. You know, so many times people say, this is unprecedented or whatever, you know.
No,
and you
it's
go,
not.
And you go, no, it's not. Yeah, it's today, it's a thing, and I don't like it, but the idea of contesting elections, or you and I have talked about this on the show before, when people say, I can't believe this mudslinging, we've devolved into it. And we go, nah, we were doing that early on in our republic as well. So in this alternate universe of 1828, give me your elevator talk. Like, what happens here?
Okay, stop me if you've heard this before, but the 1828 election was a rematch between the previous two candidates for the 1824 election, and there's accusations of stolen elections and fake news and political corruption and even an assassination attempt. Now, the assassination attempt, obviously, on Andrew Jackson wasn't in the election. It was after he was elected president. But, you know, but like I said, stop me if you've heard this before. Because
it's amazing how much, I mean, if you're a student of history, maybe it's not amazing, but for folks that haven't paid attention, they're like, wait a second, this is exactly what we're talking about in 2024.
Exactly, and up until the end of the book, when the alternate universe kicks in, all of the events that are covered in the campaign and the election are based off of real life events. Like, there was a big trade war and a big tariff passed in 1828. There were accusations of stolen elections with the 1824 election and the shenanigans that went on in the House of Representatives that ultimately got John Quincy Adams the election in the House of Representatives, despite Andrew Jackson having the most number of Electoral College votes and the most number of popular votes in 1824. And there was accusations of fake news, because back then, the best way for the different political parties to get their message out to the people was to fund media organizations, mm-hmm. newspapers. So that's why even to this day, you have a bunch of small town newspapers throughout the South and throughout America that are named the so-and-so Democrat or the so-and-so Republican, because they got their start because they were funded by those political parties. And so, all of the events up until the end of the book is based off of real life events that actually happened. Including the assassination attempt.
This is, the overlay is uncanny here. And, you know, what you're talking about, we've talked about it on the show in the past, where you would have that paper that was funded by a candidate, or they would fund an editorialist, right? Somebody who would then, instead of them having to say the thing about the other candidate, right? So Jackson doesn't have to say this about Adams. The paper writes this about Adams, then Jackson can comment on what the paper said about Adams instead of saying it himself.
Exactly. That's so, that's the way it happened. Even going back to the Adams and Jefferson, and to a lesser extent, even George Washington, when George Washington ran for president, but especially it started to kick up really with the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist. Even
so, you know? I mean, people can get a history lesson, but also, we're going to get some fiction. We're going to get some entertainment.
Exactly, because the point of the book is to get to the point of what would happen. What would have happened if the United States had broken up into different countries? And to get to that point, I had to have a spark, so to speak, to get us to get my alternate universe there. And the 1828 presidential rematch is that spark. And of course, because of the similarities between 1828 and 2024, it's going to become a critique of the 2024 election and the political environment around it, even though it wasn't intended to be that way. It kind of is going to become that.
No, did you, I mean, as things have come, you know, history has been unfolding now, today, what's happening now, have you been having those moments go, holy cow, I wrote this and look what's happening now? Oh my gosh, that other thing happened?
As a matter of fact, the day that President Trump had his assassination attempt on him in Pennsylvania, I was finishing up the book, and I was like, well, I had thought about putting an assassination attempt in the book, but I was like, that assassination attempt on Andrew Jackson was after he was elected and then after he was president. It happened in Washington, D.C. But I was like, so I initially left it out of the book, but while I was finishing up the book, the assassination attempt happened. I was like, well, I got to go ahead and put it in the book now. So I went back and wrote a chapter where there is an assassination attempt on Andrew Jackson because of the Trump assassination attempt in Pennsylvania.
Wow. If somebody wants to get a copy of the book, and they'll have a chance possibly to win one here, but if they want to go pick this up or Unknown Soldier, how do they find you? I mean, just best go online or local? How do they do it?
Well, right now, Barnes & Noble's in Spanish Fort and Page & Palette in Fairhope both have copies of 1828 that are available for sale. Haunted Bookshop will have some copies by the end of the week. But the best way to get either Unknown Soldier or 1828 is go to my website, and that's David L. Preston, and that's all one word, no spaces, no dashes, DavidLPreston.com. And you can order a signed copy of either book directly from me, hardcover or paperback.
It's very good. I tell you what, speaking of which, let's do this right now. Lee and I'm giving you a 7-second heads up. Looking for caller number, let's do caller 3 right now at 343-0106. Because David brought me 2 copies. I'm keeping one, David. But he brought me 2 signed copies of 1828. So caller number 3, the book is yours. Just let Lee and I know your contact info. Before we wrap up, too. I asked you last time when we talked about Unknown Soldier, but so the people that are listening here and go, wow, this guy did it. How hard is it or easy is it? What is the process of getting a book published in 2024?
The hardest part of getting a book published in 2024, any era, is actually starting the process of writing the book. So anybody that I ask, that asked me, what's the best piece of advice to give to any aspiring authors is just start writing. Start the process of writing, because once you start writing, the ideas will start flowing and it'll just become a much smoother process. But you can't finish a book until you start a book. So that's the biggest obstacle, and that's the biggest obstacle I had. I mean, with Unknown Soldier, I had the idea of writing those books for 20 plus years before I actually even sat down and started the actual process of writing the book, because life gets in the way. You become your biggest critic of, oh, I'm not a great author, I'm not a great writer. My obstacles were spelling and grammar, but with the advancements in AI technology, they can catch every wrong spelling, every wrong grammatical error. The process is to just start writing the book and start with outlining your idea, because if you have that outline, it makes it much easier to write a book.
Excellent work, man. And thanks for hopping on, and best of luck with this new book.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, David Preston, new one's 1828. He told you where to pick it up, so go check it out. And coming up, Sarah Curry from AltaPoint joins me for time for a checkup on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile and time for a checkup. Great to have in studio Sarah Curry, mental health professional from AltaPoint, to talk about the FEP program. So acronyms, FEP is what?
First Episode Psychosis.
Okay. So I know what each of those words mean, but I don't know what that means together. Sarah, what is that?
Right. So psychosis is a type of mental illness where people are experiencing things that other people do not, such as hallucinations, delusional or confused thinking. They may be seeing things, hearing things. They might be paranoid. So those are examples of symptoms of a psychotic illness. And then what we mean by first episode is that the symptoms have recently started within the last year. We have a little leeway with that, but the idea is to catch the illness in the early stages so we can teach them to manage it and stay as stable as possible.
Does it, and there may be multiple answers to this, which is fine. Is it a light switch or is it a rheostat with these? Does it start to fade in, or does all of a sudden there it is?
And the answer is both or either. Some people experience a very dramatic sudden onset, and it can be triggered by something like stress or a life event or drug use or something like that. Other people, it's gradual and they almost don't notice it, and their family almost don't notice it because it is so gradual.
Which, that's going to be the tougher ones too, because you may not, you know, waking up from Monday to Tuesday, you don't realize there's been that change, even though it's incrementally happening.
Right.
So what do y'all do at Ulta Point with your program, this FEP program, to help those people?
So we provide a comprehensive array of outpatient services. We have our own psychiatrist who does a weekly clinic for medication management. We have two care coordinators that can help with any type of resource that the young person or family may need, including education and employment, if they are at a point in the illness that they can manage to do those things. They are also provided with therapy, which is individual, group, and family as needed.
You said young person as well. Mm-hmm. Is there a period of time in the life, you talked about situations that lead to people having this FEP, but is there a suite of ages where it happens more than others?
There is. Our age range for our program is 15 to 25. There is some wiggle room in that. We do have one person that started at 14, which is pretty early and not typical. And we do have some people that they are 25, 26-ish, even before onset. And we can kind of adjust those age ranges as we need to.
And that's y'all's age range that you're looking at with Ulta Point. Are there cases that... if we're looking at a graph right here, I mean, is that the age group that most of this happens?
Yes, it is. I have heard of onset later than 25 or 26, but I think that's pretty unusual. And I have also heard of earlier than 14 or 15. Again, pretty unusual. The vast majority are in that 15 to 25.
Sarah, have y'all figured out then, you know, talking about these exacerbating circumstances mm-hmm. out there that you laid out earlier, and now we have this age. What's going on at that age that makes this happen more? Do you know, has science shown us that why this area, this age, this suite of ages is more susceptible?
That's probably a question that I can't answer, and I wish Dr. Moore were here with me. He's our psychiatrist, and he probably knows more about that. I'm assuming it's a lot to do with the whole adolescent and the brain fully developing.
Gotcha.
Is part of it.
So if we're watching this, I don't know how many people, and I might not use the right term, would self-report having mm-hmm. one of these, as you know, maybe if it came on incrementally, they wouldn't know to self-report. But what do loved ones, caretakers of these 15 to 25 year olds, what are they looking for if maybe they're trying to think, okay, well, something's going on? What are signs?
Obviously, anything that's unusual or a big change in your family member or loved one's behavior.
Because teenagers I've got a couple of them.
Exactly. And so you do have to balance out, teenagers stay in their room a lot.
Right.
But let's say they're not sleeping. You hear them. They're up mm-hmm. pacing all night, walking around. They're not doing their normal eating pattern. They're not doing their normal hygiene. So it can just be kind of a constellation of behavioral changes that alert you know, something is not right.
And at that point, is it the point to just, I know to get in touch, we'll talk about how to get in touch in the program, but do you ask the kid a question there? Do you say how you feeling, or do you just say, do you want help? I mean,
as far as the parent?
No, the parent. If they, mm-hmm. they see these things you just laid out, what do they say?
I mean, I think they can address it just like they would any other concern, and it kind of is dependent on the parent-child relationship or the family-child relationship, because it isn't always apparent. But, right. You know, you kind of have to know how you approach your loved one and absolutely just say, hey, I've been noticing you don't seem to be sleeping as well. Is something going on? Are you upset? Can I help you with anything? And just kind of start the dialogue that way.
All right. So they're in that situation. They want to get through to AltaPoint. What's the best way to do? Just call y'all or go online? What do you do?
Either one. You can go online and get a lot of information at altapoint.org, our website. And then CarePoint, or our access to care department, is 251-450-2211. They are the first stop for all referrals, AltaPoint, and they are aware of our program as well as the other resources and can get you directed.
Hi, Sarah, thank you for being here. Thanks for bringing this
Absolutely.
Up.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Our guest, Sarah Curry, mental health professional with AltaPoint.